Stop laughing. This is erotic.
I'm on a new medication and I think it's making me hallucinate.
I would have been a Ted Bundy victim.
Yeah. I had no idea that so many people out there felt the same way I did. Now I want a pina colada.
An acquired taste.
This is an acquired taste podcast. I'm Bethany Watson, your Victorian library designing, Home Depot everyday visiting. I'm driving everywhere instead of walking, so I'm back to wearing ridiculous footwear, friend.
And I'm Kathleen Heaney, your I just spent a blissful 24 hours totally alone in a huge house with a pool to myself, and I'm feeling so good, sipping on my 7-Eleven coffee. I have a new Instagram handle and a new website, friend.
Yay! And every week, Kathleen and I get together to discuss our lives and what's weird in the world, and we invite you to join us. Kathleen, what are you talking about this week?
This week, I am talking about how to admit you are wrong.
Cancel the segment.
No, let's move on. No, Bethany?
No.
I think this is something that maybe both you and I need to really dig into.
No.
Because sometimes I see what you did there.
I'm shutting you down.
I am wrong a lot of the times. You are wrong a lot of the times. And you know what? We have a very particular type of friendship.
Yeah.
Relationship. We're business partners and friends.
Yeah.
Which sometimes makes for like a, I don't know, like a messy mud pie. Pie of a dessert.
Yeah, strange bedfellows.
Strange bedfellows. What's on your plate this week, Bethany?
I am talking about Evil Otto.
Oh.
This is O-T-T-O.
Okay.
This is a video game villain from back in the day.
Oh.
Which he reportedly and allegedly caused 3 real world deaths.
A video game villain that actually caused people in the world to die?
This is the story.
Oh, I can't wait to get into it.
So we're going to talk about it. And by the way, if you are new or if you've never done it before, please visit our Patreon.
Yes.
Patreon.com/acquired taste. We have so many different levels. There's something for everyone. You can go from being just a tipper for a buck. You can go to a $5 level, which is our most popular.
Yes.
There's a book club level. There's a we'll take you to McDonald's on us level.
Yes. I will tell you this, Bethany. I did book club last week, and having book club is so fun because not only do I get to read books that I'm reading anyway,
totally,
and then see taste buds and discuss them, discuss the books, but every time we have book club, something that I never would have thought of, a perspective from the book or a moment that I didn't fully absorb, somebody else shares their aha moment about the book, and it just blows my mind.
It's so fun when you read something or take something in and you're like, I know exactly the way that I was supposed to have perceived it, and someone just blindsides you with their fist of knowledge, and they're like, no. Also, this whole thing was happening that you didn't see.
So you are officially cohabitating with editor to the pod, Dennis Callow, your lover of many years.
We are living in a home together.
Yeah.
From being 2 New Yorkers, he's a lifelong New Yorker. Uh-huh. I've lived in a New York apartment for 10 years.
Yes.
To having a home is crazy. And we are documenting just all of it on social media because more than anything, we just sort of cannot believe how lucky we are. We're not homeowners, we're home renters.
Yeah.
But I learned an important lesson, which is that if you are so afraid to leave a situation that isn't serving you anymore because you're afraid that you were so lucky to have this thing, there's no way you would ever get lucky again to have something different or better.
Oh.
Shut that shit down.
Yeah.
Because I stayed in this apartment I loved in New York.
I mean, the best apartment I've ever seen in New York City.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
But my stress level was so high, I just didn't want to be in the city anymore. But I was afraid to leave because my landlords were so great.
Yeah.
And then we finally moved. Mm-hmm. And our landlord is amazing.
Aww.
He is this sweet man. He came at us with a bunch of rules, and then he met us for the first time, and he was like, oh, never mind with all that stuff.
Wait,
like,
what were some of the rules?
Not allowed to use the fireplace.
Oh.
Not allowed to go in the garage.
Yeah.
Like, the garage is sort of his workspace.
Oh, get out of
here.
Like,
all of this stuff, right?
Yeah.
If rent isn't paid by, like, rent is due on the 1st. If you pay rent on the 2nd, you get some sort of insane charge.
Oh my God.
But once we met him for the first time, we're allowed to use the garage. He's like, oh yeah, you can use the fireplace. And he's giving us, like, you know, 5-day leniency on rent, which is what most landlords do.
Yeah.
And he's such a kind man. He brought me two bottles of expensive wine. Oh, and Kathleen, get this.
Yeah.
I've never heard of this before. He said that for his tenants, if you pay on time for a full year, he gives you $1,200. And we thought he was joking.
What?
And he's like, no, I am a lifelong teacher and I believe that working on incentives is the right way to work. So if you pay your rent on time for a full year, I give you a check for $1,200.
Oh, well, Bethany, I mean, first of all, that is the most ridiculous thing
it's
I've
insane.
Ever heard. Second of all, what an amazing guy.
He's great.
That
He's
is,
great.
You're crazy. So you know how you do it? Bethany, you never have to think about it ever again.
Yeah.
You write him out 12 checks
yeah.
for the whole year.
Whole year.
Date it for the first.
Yep.
And then you just make sure you have that money in your bank account.
Yep.
And you don't even have to deal with any of the paperwork.
It's wild. And so like that is an insane level of nicery.
Yeah.
And I was so afraid I'd never find a nice landlord again. And so yeah. I stayed in a place that wasn't working. So I feel like it's like that way with so many things. Jobs, relationships,
yeah.
like just anything.
You
deserve and can find mm-hmm. equally good, if not better things.
Yes.
Because if it happened once, it can happen again. It's a very important lesson.
Yeah, well.
Speaking of Kathleen, new life starts. You have rebranded.
I have, Bethany, which, okay, this really folds into what you were just talking about. For years, everybody on social media has known me as Web Girl Kathleen.
Right.
Because when you and I worked in radio, it made sense for me to brand myself that way.
You were the web mistress.
Yes. I have rebranded. I don't want to explain to anybody why my name is Web Girl Kathleen. It feels itchy on my
yeah.
tongue.
Yeah.
I don't want to explain my past. And so my new persona is, drumroll, at Kathleen Loves Color.
Gosh.
Bow, bow, bow.
Go near, near.
Yeah, because I love color.
Yes.
My main goal in life is just to make everybody incorporate more color into their life.
Yep.
Except for you, Bethany.
Except for me.
You have an impenetrable wall
yeah.
that I can't cross the barrier for whatever reason.
Of black.
Black
for my clothing.
Yeah.
I do have color in my home, but that's only because I have mental health issues and I definitely need color in my home.
Your heart is also black.
Yeah, black.
Mm-hmm.
Black.
Mm-hmm.
My mood is black. My depression is black.
Black cloud over your head.
Yeah, it is.
All the time, just like in those really cute depression commercials.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly, that's me.
Anyway, so.
But you love color.
Follow Bethany Watson at Miss Bethany Watson.
And follow Kathleen at Kathleen Loves Color. Because she does.
And then join our Patreon.
Hell yeah. We're just giving you so many things to do. Kathleen,
yes.
I know you love true crime.
It helps me relax.
Which is real questionable. I also love true crime. Sometimes you just want to feel like you're in the world.
Yes.
You're hearing about stories, especially stories that you have not heard about. That is why, Kathleen, you and I love the podcast True Crime Couple. They debuted in July of 2017. It's Kay and John. They're a couple.
They're
married.
They're so cute.
So Kay tells John true crime stories, and then he, along with the audience, follows all the twists and turns that Kay has laid out. So one might say that John is the audience surrogate.
Yes. And you know what? If you're looking for something where they don't banter, because, you know, like this podcast.
Yeah, who? I hate it when podcasts start with like 10 to 12 minutes of banter.
Oh man, it's the worst. You know what? Kay and John, they get right into
yep.
it. They jump right into the story. So you never have to hear about their boring lives.
Plus, this is really what I truly love about them. True Crime Couple prides themselves on being respectful to both the victims and their families.
Yeah.
The point is not to like dig into the salacious details, because these are real people. The point is to give the victims back their voices, which we love.
And they cover the lesser known cases. So if you're into true crime, you're definitely going to be excited to hear ones you've never heard before. And CrimeReads.com listed them on their essential podcasts of the summer, and they've made the monthly Hot 50 list for Podcast Magazine 12 times.
So listen to True Crime Couple wherever you listen to podcasts, and definitely tell Kay and John that we said hi. Kathleen,
yeah.
Let's rewind ourselves to the year 1980.
Oh, wow. We're really going back.
Mm-hmm. Neither of us is alive.
Nope.
Video games are the oldest you can picture. So picture like Pac-Man.
Extremely rudimentary.
Yeah, you are looking down at like a grid.
Yeah.
And there's like a one little thing moving, trying to get away or attack other moving little things.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to pick my favorite video game of all time,
yeah,
it would be Miss Pac-Man.
Ah, yeah. She has a bow. That's how you know she's a lady.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
My dad said when he was in college, he used to skip school in college to go play Pong at the arcade.
That sounds so wholesome.
It's the most wholesome. He was the first guy in his small town to wear bell bottoms and the last guy to stop wearing bell bottoms.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Yeah. So the game we're talking about is a game called Berserk.
Okay.
Which is an arcade game that came out in 1980.
Oh.
It has a super similar layout to Pac-Man.
Okay.
The premise is that you are a humanoid who has been taken prisoner by robots. You were in the future.
Okay.
They have put you in a facility that is just filled with mazes, which is my nightmare, having hysterical direction blindness. And the premise is you have to escape out of all of these mazes, okay?
Okay.
In the meantime, within the mazes, there are robots who are going to shoot lasers at you. So you have to shoot lasers at them first to kill them.
That sounds fun. I like killing with the lasers.
Great. Totally fine.
Uh-huh.
Now, here's what's going to kill you. The robots, the laser guns.
Uh-huh.
The walls, which are electrified, so you can't hit one of the lines.
Okay.
Okay. Or Evil Otto.
It really feels to me like you are pulling the wool over my eyes and you have just come up with this game concept on your own.
Yeah.
And you're workshopping it on me.
Yeah.
Much like I do the jokes that I tell on this podcast with my friends.
Yeah, workshop them first. Now, Evil Otto isn't famous to this day because of the game Berserk.
Okay.
He is famous to this day because he is believed to have caused 3 real life deaths.
Oh.
And this is why we're going to talk about Evil Otto.
Okay.
Okay. So first, a little bit about the game. So if you linger too long in one of the mazes, Evil Otto shows up.
Oh.
And you know who he is because he is a bouncing circle with a smiley face.
Oh, that is just so creepy.
It's awful.
Oh, no.
And here's what he can do.
Yeah.
He kills you just by touching you.
Ooh.
But also, he can phase through walls, i.e. he can move through the lines. So you have to go around the walls. He can just sink right through them.
That doesn't seem like that's at all fair.
It's not, but he's evil.
Okay.
Okay? You have a joystick and you have a firing button on top. That's how you're playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot kill him. That's the other thing. Your only means of escape from this bouncing smiley face is by running away from him.
What kind of game has a villain that is indestructible?
I mean, a really good one. This is one of the first games. Like, usually you can kill the boss.
Yeah.
This was kind of, I don't know if ahead of its time. I don't know enough about video games.
Yeah.
But, it was strange.
I would say ahead of its time.
Yeah.
I mean, even Superman had some sort of kryptonite.
Yeah, it was kryptonite, turns out.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, is that why they say that's your kryptonite?
Yeah, because kryptonite made him like real weak.
I thought kryptonite was the word for something that you couldn't stand up to.
I mean, it is now, thanks to Superman.
But Superman's kryptonite is kryptonite.
Yeah. Yes, I believe so. Which is interesting because I also thought he was from the planet Krypton. So it would feel like kryptonite would make him stronger.
Yeah, like if you're from Earth,
soil makes
you
makes us stronger.
Yeah.
Anytime I've been on a not Earth and someone's thrown soil at me, I get stronger.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. On Mars, you can grow poop potatoes in soil.
By yourself, as it turns out.
Apparently.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about Evil Otto. So the guy who invented the game Berserk, the main designer, his name is Alan McNeil. He said he based the game on a dream he had one night where he was in a black and white video game and he had to fight robots, which is awesome. The dream I had last night was I did laundry.
The dream I had last night was that I was flirting with someone who is not my husband.
We're all having great dreams.
Did you really do laundry in your dream?
The full night. That's how you know I'm so stressed.
Well, also, that's like something very sexy when you don't have a washer dryer you're about to.
Oh, it's like the ultimate indulgence.
It's like your current form of a wet dream.
Totally. Okay, so the designer Alan also said he named Evil Otto after the security chief at his old job, whose name was Dave Otto.
Okay.
He said that Dave mistreated him and the other employees and he would smile while doing it.
How messed up is that? Imagine bumping into your former boss and it's like, I got real famous making this video game.
Yeah.
Guess who I named the villain after? here.
This guy you hired.
You asshole.
So for like one example he gave of Dave Otto being a total a-hole, there was apparently a mandatory noon hour lunch. Mm. And Dave Otto would lock all of the employees out of the building to enforce it.
Oh, my God.
And he would also play, you know what Muzak is?
Yeah.
He played Muzak. He would like stream it in all of the rooms, whether they wanted it or not.
Oh,
okay.
Torture.
So that's Evil Otto.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Yeah.
But then come the deaths. In Crown Point, Indiana,
yeah,
there was an 18-year-old guy. He was like 5'10". He was like 170 pounds. No health problems. Seemed totally fine. His name was Peter Bukowski.
Normal sized guy.
It was like this super snowy day. You know those days where you wake up and so much snow has fallen overnight and the news says there's going to be more. Mm-hmm. And it's like lake effect winds. And it's just you're not going anywhere for kind of a while.
That's my favorite type of day, though.
Love those days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Peter was like waking up to one of those days. And because he's a teenager, this is boring.
Yeah.
So he ultimately, like, he walks to his friend's house. He walks to his girlfriend's house. He walks back to his friend's house. Ultimately, he and his friend decide to go to Friar Tuck's gaming room, which is an arcade.
Of course. Is it next to Paul's Castle Foods?
Probably. Ron's Castle Foods. Oh, thank you very much.
Sorry.
So as they were walking to Friar Tuck's, Peter complained to his friend that he was thirsty and short of breath.
Okay. I mean, yeah, it's stressful walking
totally.
In a blizzard.
Absolutely. And so because this was the 80s, when you're thirsty, you buy a soda.
Yeah.
So he goes to the gas station. He buys a soda, quenches his thirst.
Pepsi Clear.
Exactly. Once they get to the arcade, Peter starts playing Berserk. Mm-hmm. And he gets 3 high scores. Boom, high score. You put your initials in. Boom, another high score. You put your initials in. Boom, high score. He puts his initials in. He takes a couple of steps away from the arcade machine. And he drops.
What?
Falls very ill. The security comes. The arcade owner was devastated. He comes. They call the ambulance. The ambulance comes. Peter was announced dead on arrival at the hospital.
What?
Yep.
I mean, what a... He just had the trifecta of high scores.
Yeah.
And then his life ends.
Yeah.
That's no way to be a teenager in the 80s.
No.
Oh, my God.
Then the next death. This death happened about a year earlier, actually, surprisingly.
Okay.
But it only came out after Peter's death because of Berserk.
Because of the correlation.
Yes. So this happened to a guy named Jeff Daly. He was 19 years old, and he had allegedly played the game Berserk for hours.
Mm.
Hours and hours and hours.
Mm.
He hit a high score of 16,660.
I mean, sounds good to me.
If you notice, 3 of the scariest numbers are in that score.
Oh.
666.
The number of the beast!
My mom used to have a license plate with 666 in it. Which is really...
Did it make her nervous? She's very religious.
I mean, no, it didn't, but it should have, right?
It should have.
Would you drive a car? Let's say, okay, you're about to get a new car.
Yeah.
Okay? You don't get to pick your license plate.
No.
They do it for you at the dealership.
Yeah.
They register you with the state.
Yeah.
What would you do if your license plate came back 666?
It would be so on brand. I'd be so excited.
Like, my mom's license plate started with 666 as the first 3 numbers.
That's awesome.
I mean, it was red. It was a red minivan.
Oh, that's the devil's car. That's the devil's minivan.
The devil's minivan to hell.
Yeah. Going straight to hell.
Oh, my God.
So he scored the high score of 16,660. And then he dies.
At the arcade?
Unknown.
Later. 19-year-old.
Yeah.
What was his first name again?
Jeffrey.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. So that's death number 2.
Yeah.
Lastly, the last death supposedly caused by Evil Otto, who is psychically able to reach out and cause deaths.
Apparently, he can not only permeate through walls mm-hmm. in the video game, mm-hmm. he can permeate through human membranes.
Through walls of the human membrane, through time and space.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
A guy named Edward Clark Jr. Now, this is 1988. This is a few years later.
Oh, okay.
At the River Oaks Mall, which is a couple of blocks from Friar Tuck's.
Oh, okay. So Indiana again.
It's hanging out.
Castle Point.
Yeah. So he was hanging out at River Oaks Mall, which he did.
Yeah.
And then he decided to go to the arcade. And sometimes, I guess, at arcades, some people would leave coins behind or like forget their coins on top of the arcade machine.
Yeah.
So he found a few coins on top of a machine. He put them in. He started playing Berserk.
Okay.
A guy named Pedro Roberts came up and claimed that those coins were his.
Oh.
And then Pedro Roberts threatened him with a knife.
Well, finders keepers, Pedro.
Yes.
You can't just leave your coins willy-nilly anywhere.
Also, turns out they were not his coins.
Oh.
So when you threaten someone with a knife, yeah. Turns out that is contraindicated for public behavior.
Mm-hmm.
He was kicked out by security.
Should have been put in jail or something.
Yeah. Now, security said to our friend Edward Clark Jr., stay behind. Let Pedro leave first. We will wait 10 minutes. You and your friends can leave, but go by a different route out of the arcade. Don't leave the same way Pedro left.
Yeah, because he's gonna beat you up.
He's waiting for you probably.
Yeah, yeah.
They did not listen.
That sounds like the premise of an 80s movie.
Totally does. Yeah, this has 80s written all over it.
It does.
So Edward Clark Jr. did not listen. He and his friends exited the same way that Pedro did. Pedro found him, stabbed him. Edward Clark Jr. was pronounced dead on arrival at the hospital.
Oh my, how old was Edward Clark Jr. again?
Does
it say?
It does not say.
Late teens, early 20s.
Yeah, young.
Yeah.
Yeah, young. So here's the thing about these three stories and Evil Otto.
Yeah.
The first one, Peter Bukowski,
actually
happened. He did unfortunately die at the arcade.
Did they ever find a cause of death?
Yes.
Oh.
Peter was not killed by Evil Otto. He was killed by an incredibly rare heart condition that causes the body to replace healthy heart tissue with scar tissue and fatty tissue.
Oh my God.
It's called arrhythmogenic right ventricular cardiomyopathy.
Oh God.
And it's incredibly dangerous because it often does not show up on any sort of medical tests that are done until it shows up as a heart attack or death. And what had happened is he had walked a total of 4 miles that day in the snow.
Yeah.
Which is a ton of work.
Very taxing.
And then drinking a soda, which is caffeine.
Yes.
And then, like, you do get pretty active when you're playing video games.
Course.
And you're like, and you're standing up because it's the arcade and high scores. And it's like
adrenaline.
Yep, exactly.
You're about to win. You're about to die. Otto's permeating all the walls.
Yep.
And are you going to lose the game?
And that, they believe, is what killed him, was his underlying heart condition.
This is why I feel safest sitting on my couch.
Yes.
Watching a calming television show.
Some sort of cozy mystery.
HGTV.
Yep. Drinking a sparkly water. Okay. The next death, Jeffrey Daly.
Yeah.
This person either was not real.
Yeah.
Or his name was used for this story.
Hmm.
So Jeffrey Daly was one of three real people. Two of them were older. And then one who was about the right age, according to public records, actually died in a car crash. So he did pass away, but it had nothing to do with the game Berserk.
Oh, rumors are so mean.
Yeah. And the other thing is that they point out is in the game Berserk, the score 16,660 was actually super low.
Oh.
So if he'd been playing for hours, it does not make sense that he had only scored that many points.
You know, life back then seems just so simple. Like, Bethany, imagine this. Let's go hang out after we're done working, right?
Yeah, sure.
And we just go to the arcade.
Yeah.
We get some Diet Cokes.
Yeah.
We play some skee ball.
Totally, because no one can get a hold of us because we don't have cell phones.
We don't have to sit at a table in a coffee shop looking each other in the eye.
No, no, no. We can just play things so we can be near each other but not engaging with each other.
Yeah, and we'll say something interesting every now and then in between moving the joysticks and aiming our skee balls.
Like, hey man, good shot.
And getting our tickets and going to the coin machine.
Getting a clown doll filled with what feels like really cheap fiber fill.
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah. Or I would like sometimes give my tickets to a little kid.
Yeah, I didn't ever do that.
Here you go, kid. I just made you rich.
No, no, no. I would never do that. I'm going to take my tickets. And then lastly, the knife fight, the murder did happen and was awful, but it had nothing to do with Evil Otto. It just had to do with a dude with a knife who was being an asshole.
God, it doesn't seem like video game coins is worth stabbing somebody
over. Is that crazy? So why did this happen?
Okay.
And why did this urban legend become an urban legend?
Because life was boring in the 80s.
Yes. And also, think about the new technology of video games.
Yeah.
Similar to the new technology now of AI,
yeah,
self-driving cars, mm-hmm, Alexa, mm-hmm, you're hearing all of these stories Alexa's listening to because she is.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are afraid of VR. People are afraid of what all of the things that are new. We start hearing stories. Remember when cell phones first came out? If you were alive when cell phones first came out, there were so many news stories about how cell phones gave you brain cancer.
Oh, yeah. Don't sleep with it underneath your pillow.
No, don't ever use it near your head. Pull it away from your head. Put it on speakerphone. This is like, it's such a trend. And so these stories were a way for people to be like, I think this kid may have died from this evil arcade games. Video games are evil. They're causing people to be violent, evil, evil, violent. And then you get an urban legend.
Do you remember when cell phones first came out and there's always like one person in the room who saw you using it that was like, there's not enough research on it. But do with it as you please.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do what thou wilt.
You know, there is AI, Bethany. Let's say you're a blogger.
Uh-huh.
But you made a video, uh-huh, and you don't feel like blogging about it.
Yeah.
There is AI that will watch your video and write your blog post for you based on your video.
I don't trust it. I don't like it. It's going to cause a death.
There is so much good AI coming.
No, I don't like it.
So much more powerful than Evil Otto. And I don't think anybody's going to die because of it. I put my whole heart and trust into AI.
You shouldn't.
No,
I do. You absolutely should not.
No, we all should.
By the way, I'm going to give you some research homework.
Okay.
If you like this story.
Yeah.
Research the story of the video game Polybius. Have you ever heard of this?
Polybius.
This is the game that reportedly was invented by the CIA to control kids' minds.
No, stop. Mm-hmm. Get out of here.
Research it.
Bethany.
And that is another story.
Bethany, I'm going to bring up a keyword. I want you to tell me your thoughts on this keyword.
I hope the word is horses.
No, Bethany, the word is microdose.
Ooh, this word connotes good things for me.
Yes. You and I have partnered up with Lumi Labs.
Yes.
Because they have an amazing collection of microdose gummies. You may be on the fence about microdosing. We are here to tell you that we have both used Lumi's microdose gummies, and it has made our life so much better.
So I'm not a pot smoking person. Kathleen's not a pot smoking person.
No.
But microdosing THC is something that I do. It doesn't make you hear colors.
No.
It doesn't make you float on a green cloud of jazz cabbage.
No.
What it does is it sort of rounds the edges off of the daily stress. Mm-hmm. You're not floating. You're not feeling not like yourself. You feel like yourself on a day where you don't have all the stresses of the world on,
yes,
your shoulders. It just sort of makes you go, oh, I can actually breathe and handle the way that life feels.
Yes. And they've got something for everybody. When you go to their website, you can check out all the different flavors and strains that they have. I like taking it maybe like 7 o'clock.
Yep.
I'm going to relax. I'm going to go to bed early. If I've had a stressful day, it really helps me prepare to have a better day the next day.
Yep.
And you don't get high. You
no.
don't get high.
And I take it when either I have a lot of writing to do, and I want to sort of allow my mind to actually think about creative things and not be so burdened down with daily stress. Or I take it if I want to go to bed. The other cool thing is that you can take it in 1, 2, or 3 gummies. They give you a list of like, 1 gummy, here's what you're going to feel. 2, 3, here's what you're going to feel.
Yeah.
And the gummy canisters are square shaped.
Yeah.
So they fit in your fridge, in the door yes. of your fridge really nicely, yeah. which is like not a selling point they use, but I found it very convenient.
They're also vegan.
Yeah.
So if you're vegan, these microdosing gummies are vegan too.
Yep. So Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and then use the code TASTE to get free shipping and 30% off your first order.
Links to microdosing gummies can be found in our show notes, but if you just want to write it down right now, it's microdose.com and then use the code TASTE.
Bombas mission is simple. Make the most comfortable clothes ever and match every item sold with an equal item donated. So when you buy Bombas, you're also giving to someone in need.
We have been chatting about Bombas's socks forever.
Yeah.
But I recently experienced the magic that is Bombas's cotton underwear.
Oh, yes.
Because I recently came to the realization that I need more cotton underwear in my life.
Totally.
And I am, you know, I'm a never nude.
Yes.
I am so pleased with my Bombas cotton underwear that I've been walking around in my undies.
Kathleen!
I know. And my husband is like, who are you? And I'm like, I'm somebody who loves cotton undies from Bombas.
Bombas has no-show socks that are designed for comfort. They have t-shirts that are made thoughtfully, like with invisible seams and soft fabric. And they're underwear is so breathable. It fits so well.
Yeah.
It feels like you are nude, even if you're a never nude like Kathleen.
And you know what? Fall is coming up. And so now is the best time than ever to raid through your sock drawer and your t-shirt drawer and your underwear drawer. Get rid of everything that no longer serves you and get yourself some new stuff from Bombas that is going to feel good on your body.
And feel good in the warm part of your heart strings. Because did you know that socks, underwear, and t-shirts are the three most requested clothing items at homeless shelters? So when you are buying Bombas, Bombas is donating one for everything you're buying. So you're helping people. Bombas customers like you have helped donate over 50 million items of essential clothing so far.
That's amazing.
So go to bombas.com/taste and get 20% off of your first purchase.
That's bombas.com/taste for 20% off.
bombas.com/taste.
Bethany.
Yes, Kathleen.
I am here today to talk about...
You're giving a presentation.
Yes, I am.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm here today.
Yes. It's because I just came from a conference. Yeah. I'm like in conference mode. Okay, let me loosen up a little bit.
Okay, loosen up.
And deliver it to you like I'm a peer.
Okay. Great.
Okay. I'm going to talk about today. Nope, that's not...
That got weird.
That's exactly how I just started it. Yeah. Okay. My topic today... Mm-hmm. No.
No. Mm-mm. You're thinking too hard about it now. That's getting strange.
Listen.
Uh-huh.
I've been thinking a
Why
lot.
Why are you yelling at me?
Okay. I've just been thinking a lot...
Uh-huh.
...recently...
Yeah.
...about admitting that I'm wrong. And did you know that there's kind of like a really... very cryptic, ingrained psychology in humans behind admitting they're wrong?
I had no idea.
I know. And most recently, I've come to the realization that I owe a public apology about how I have been wrong about... No, this is going to pain me coming out.
Uh-oh.
And I would like everybody to know that this is part of my growth process.
Okay, this is a safe space.
But I'm here today to admit that in the past, I have been wrong about farmhouse decor.
Oh my God.
I am wrong about farmhouse decor.
Because you have had strong words for FHD and those who practice the art of FHD.
In the past, I have said things like, it's ugly, it's stupid if you don't live on a farm, and faux farm is...
Not faux me.
Faux not for me.
You've also said, why do you need a sliding barn door if you don't have a barn?
Yeah, that's the one thing, that's the caveat. I'm not going back on my feelings about barn doors.
I love a sliding barn door, it slides.
Bethany... It just doesn't offer enough privacy, especially for a bathroom. If you got to do the pee pee and the poo poo, whomever's on the other side of that barn door, it's not soundproof.
Well, no, not many doors are.
If you're gonna have a barn door for a bathroom door,
yeah,
at least have some sort of machine in there that plays like old McDonald's while you're doing number two.
But so many doors are like hollow, made out of plywood. They're not soundproof.
But it still offers more sound privacy than a rolling barn door. It's like when Australians come to America. For the life of them, they cannot figure out why in our bathroom stalls there are gaps.
Yeah, I also can't figure that out, by the way.
That is the same thing. It's the equivalent of having a gap in the public bathroom just at your home. So your kids and your guests can hear you go pee pee plop plop.
Oh, what a relief it is. No, that's fizz fizz, fizz. Plop plop.
What a relief it is. Okay, so I am wrong about farmhouse decor.
That's very big of you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And it takes a lot of courage for me to admit that I'm wrong about farmhouse decor. And gentle listeners, if there is something that you are wrong about, no matter what it may be, I'm here to share with you everything that I learned by reading this fabulous article on Vox.com that was recently published by journalist Ali Volpe.
Okay.
It's literally called How to Admit You Are Wrong. It's opened my eyes to admitting that you are not always right.
Yeah, it's powerful.
It is really hard to admit that you're wrong. And I would say in the last 5 years, uh-huh. I've gotten pretty good at it.
Sure.
Because, I mean, to a certain extent, my self-confidence is in the toilet.
Oh,
and I'm
honey.
Just like, I'm good at nothing. I'm literally not good at anything.
It's not good. That's not good.
I would say right now on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm maybe like 7.
In confidence?
In that I am able to admit that I'm wrong.
Oh, that's very high. Good for you.
You look skeptical.
No, I was skeptical that you. I thought you meant like you felt confident 7 out of 10.
Oh no, no.
Based on what you just said, I was surprised.
No, no, no. I've graduated from like the bottom of the toilet to like just making it up over the rim.
Okay. Well, all right.
But I'm pretty good at admitting I'm wrong.
Okay.
And that is because a lot of times I use Neil. As a sounding board.
Oh, great. Yeah.
And like everybody in their life should have a sounding board.
Yeah.
Like, do you have a sounding board?
Yeah, I have like 17.
Now, who's on your sounding board team?
Dennis and my entire family.
Your entire family. Yeah. And you know what's nice about having a sounding board, and especially people who love you?
Yeah.
Because sometimes Neil will say to me in certain situations, like, I care more about your growth right now, mm-hmm. whether it be in business or in life, than I do about your feelings.
That is so useful, because you do not want people who are just going to tell you what you want to hear because they're afraid to hurt your feelings.
Yes. Sometimes you need those people. And I feel like everybody should have at least one trusted person where you sit down and you make this agreement. There are going to be times when I ask for your advice and you say to me, feelings aside, I love you. But this is how I really feel about the situation.
Totally.
Like my friend sent me a picture of a rug that she had the other day. And I said to her, as long as you like it, that's all that matters.
Sure.
And you know what that means when somebody says that to you.
Oh, it's like, oh, crap.
Oh, man.
Well.
Yeah. Can you think of a situation recently? Because there's one that I need to apologize to you for. And I'll do that after I ask you this.
Okay.
Can you think of anything recently where you were wrong or afterwards you were like, crap?
Yeah. I mean, always. You and I just had a run-in.
Yeah.
We have different communication styles.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So I think I don't want to. But see, I don't think I don't know. I don't want to say that I don't think I did anything wrong. But I also don't want to say that, like, I probably handled the situation 100% perfectly.
No. I'm not. Listen, and I didn't expect you to talk about our run-in. I was just like more about like, I don't know, like you were convinced that there was a 90s song that was named. You know, just OK. But yes.
OK.
Bethany, I hear what you're saying and I'm absorbing what you are saying. But we don't need to get to the nitty gritty
No. So I've been having a super hard time trying to purchase this car.
Yes, I understand that.
That I have been promised is mine and I have already put money down on.
Yeah, yeah.
They're really invested in not making it easy.
Yes.
And I was ready to send a strongly worded email. Mm-hmm. And I was advised to take out the final paragraph, which was just pure emotion.
who advised you?
My mother.
Yeah, yeah.
She said, you can send all of this because all of these things are based on facts.
Yes.
These are all facts that can be pointed to.
Yes.
The last thing where you're just saying, here's where you can do this. Here's where you can put the car. And if you need help, here's who you can ask to help you put the car in one specific place. And maybe someone else who can help you shove it further up there. You can take that part out. Which is not what I wrote, but the feelings were there.
Yeah, yeah. Neil always takes out those paragraphs for me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to admit that, like, oh, I became unprofessional when I wanted to tell the car dealership to shove my car up his ass.
Up his asshole.
Yeah.
And then choke on it.
And then the sales guy can help push it further up.
Bethany, admitting that you're wrong is so hard.
Yeah.
But have you ever really thought about why it's hard?
I think it's probably a pride thing, maybe. I have to say, I am very willing in a lot of situations to admit when I'm wrong, only because then I no longer have to try to defend myself.
Well, yeah.
Sometimes it's really hard to keep up the level of, like, you know you're wrong, but now you have to prove you're right.
It's exhausting.
Doubling down is so exhausting.
And you know what that's called, Bethany? That's called cognitive dissonance.
Oh, yeah.
So basically, that's just a fancy word for if if you know what you're doing isn't, and because things are gray, things are not black and white.
Yeah.
But if you know you're doing something like, say you're smoking.
Yeah.
You know smoking is bad. You know it's bad for your health.
Yeah.
But cognitive dissonance is when you make up excuses that you then in your own brain turn to fact.
Sure.
Like, I am very stressed right now.
Yes.
And that is why smoking is okay.
Yes. Or this is the last week I'm going to smoke. Next week I will stop smoking. So this is fine.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make any sense at all.
Nope.
It is literally just what you tell yourself. And so before, when I asked you, what do you think it is that makes it so hard to recognize that you're wrong? You said pride.
Yeah.
But let's take it back even further. When we are children, right and wrong is very, very black and white.
Yeah, you shouldn't. It's right to not put the fork in the electrical socket.
Yeah.
It's wrong to put the fork in the electrical socket.
Bethany.
Specifically, my mom was just in town and told me a story of when my younger sister put a fork in the electrical socket.
Oh my God, did she live?
She did.
Oh, I'm so happy.
Spoiler alert.
Oh my God, I'm so happy for you. So this article in Vox talked to author Catherine Schultz. She is the author of a book called Being Wrong, Adventures in the Margin of Error. And when we are children, she says, we are given these black and white boxes to fit right and wrong into.
Mm-hmm.
And as we grow up and become adults, it's very hard to kind of see anything in between.
Oh, yeah.
So you know what's wrong. You inherently see someone else's behavior, and because it doesn't fit into your box of what's right, even though it may be what's right for them, you put it in your wrong box.
Okay.
And you yell at them.
Wow.
And that makes it really hard to sort of, like, I don't know, let's say these boxes are wood, and they're screwed together, and you can kind of open them up and all the sides lay flat.
Yeah.
You know, it's very hard to let your boxes kind of lay open and flat.
Yeah.
And admit to somebody else that what's wrong for you may not be wrong for them.
That explains so much of groups of people's responses to different things too.
And think about what this country is going through right now.
Yeah.
Where in America, we're looking back at a history that once upon a time was thought of as really black and white, how this country came to be this country.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're sort of like going back and saying, huh, like what we thought was right back then is actually wrong.
Right.
And we're taking these historical mistakes, these historical perceptions, actually realizing what they are, and then in modern day society, trying to absorb that and move forward.
And saying, you know, the people we were taught in school who are these heroes.
Yes.
Did awful things many times.
Yes.
And how do you handle that? Speaking of gray, like people who maybe did great things, but were also awful people who did awful things. And now how do we deal with that?
How do we separate the art from the artist? How do we separate awful people who were awful in their everyday lives but made amazing strides in history? It's a little bit about ego.
Yeah.
Because you grew up thinking one thing, especially when you're an adult.
Yeah.
And then you have to relearn the facts as they actually are.
Yeah.
So it's funny that you brought up the word facts.
Yeah.
When you were talking about the email that your mom was like, this is all facts.
Yeah.
Because sometimes what fits into your right and wrong box, there are no facts in there.
Yeah.
There is like sort of like an emotional, physical response to right and wrong. We know what it's like to feel right.
Yeah.
And we know what it's like to feel wrong. And if I had to choose one of those feelings, I'm definitely going to choose the right one.
Totally.
It's very hard to go back and relearn and feel the wrong one, willingly and openly feel the wrong one.
Yeah.
In this article, there was a case study talking about this scientist. Her name is Julia Strand. And she did a study about how when there's a circular beacon of light present in a noisy place where people are having conversations, like a restaurant or a bar, when this circular beacon of light is there, she found that people expend less energy listening to their conversation partner, and they're also quicker to respond when there is this circular beacon of light.
Wait, so they
Like a lighting fixture that's circular.
So they're better at listening or worse at listening?
They just expend less energy listening. So they're better at listening because it doesn't.
Oh, so it's less effort to listen.
Less effort to listen, right? Okay. And she wrote a whole paper on it, and everyone was like, "Cool, what an interesting thing you discovered." And she was given grant money, and then when she took that grant money and went to go, do the experiment again,
yeah,
she could not for the life of her recreate her findings.
Uh-oh.
And she was terrified to admit that she was wrong. Mm-hmm. She thought she was going to lose her grant. Mm-hmm. She thought she was going to lose the respect of her scientific peers. But she was like, I have to come clean about this.
Yeah.
And her peers, the grant people who gave her the money, were like, keep the money.
Yeah.
We're not going to take it away from you. And her peers said to her, seeing you admit that your findings weren't correct after all has inspired me to do the same thing with my findings.
Which is wonderful in how it should be.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you get such misinformation.
Yeah.
I cannot remember the person right now, but there was a person who came up with the idea that it has to do with the school lunches and if you put Elmo on an apple, kids are more likely to eat the apple. And it's like, yeah, but not really. His findings were super skewed and he sort of made, if you eat from a smaller plate, you'll eat less. He loved all these really pithy pop psychology things. And it turns out he was super wrong on a lot of them, but didn't admit it. And so it leads to people often changing their behaviors in ways that they think is helping and is not.
Yes.
But because the person didn't want to come clean that they couldn't replicate their findings, now we believe wrong info.
And I think that probably a lot of people who write books about fad diets, it's the same thing.
You
do one study, you find this one thing, but then you take it too far and it actually is not really scientifically right.
Yes, completely.
So here's the thing that I need to apologize to you for.
Okay.
A couple of episodes ago, I was very late to record.
Yes.
Okay. And I apologize to you.
Sure, of course.
And
yeah.
I have since tried with my actions.
Yes.
To show you that I am not going to let you down. And I've gotten to record the recording studio early.
Yes, you have.
But the first time I got to the studio early, and this is where I owe you an apology. Well, I owe you an apology for being late again.
Sure.
Right. But then when I was early, the first time I was early, I looked you in the face and I said, ha, 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 I beat you here. And that totally negated what I felt like was a very sincere apology that I gave to you for being late.
That's so funny. It's so funny how we try to soften it for ourselves, right?
Yeah.
So it was still like a defense mechanism, even though it was.
That was totally me softening the blow of what being wrong felt like.
No, but you're not. I mean, it makes sense. It makes total sense.
And here's another case study I want to talk to you about. In the article, they talked about this woman named Anna, who when she was growing up, she had this set of beliefs that she thought poor people were lazy. Mm-hmm. And the government was a bunch of socialist bureaucrats trying to play Robin Hood with her money.
Wow.
Which is a very strong statement. And then she said when she graduated from college, it was when the 2008 recession was at its peak. And she had to work three jobs, none of which offered health insurance. She rented an apartment with roommates and made instant ramen stretch two meals.
Yeah.
And she said she learned pretty quickly that sometimes, no matter how hard you work, there are systemic failures working to keep you down.
Yes, that is our country.
And those are facts that she relearned.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Another case study is this guy named Evan. He was like, I'm going to write a blog. And he was really steadfast about it. And he asked his mother, whom he lived with, to financially support him, paying for his living expenses while he was training and building out his platform. And his mother was like, nah, you should go get a job.
Yeah.
And tensions between the two of them came really really high. And he was angry because she imposed living expenses on him. And he was like, she's just trying to teach me a lesson and she doesn't support my goals. And then he said he actually sat back and saw it from his mother's perspective, which he had never actually thought about before. And like, of course, no parent wants to support their adult children trying to build out a blog platform. And he has since got a full-time job as a civil engineer, and he picked up slack around the house, and their relationship has improved.
Sure.
So it's kind of like the two things that you need to think about when you're relearning how to admit that you are wrong more easily. It's either relearning facts or seeing it from the other person's perspective.
It's so nice to have something concrete to point to say, yeah, here's how you do it.
Yeah.
Here's how to admit you're wrong, or here's how to see if you have to admit you're,
yes,
wrong.
Yes. And since a couple years ago, I really think my turning point in helping me better admit that I am wrong was when I decided that I needed to recover from my eating disorder.
Yeah.
Because admitting you're right and just like being steadfast and I am right, it takes so much more energy,
yeah,
to do that than to just sit back and say, hey, I'm like totally wrong about this.
Yeah.
You take the reins or whatever.
Yeah.
I found that admitting that I was wrong, that I can control the situation, there was a lot of joy.
Yeah.
In getting help from other people.
Totally. It is so exhausting to try and solve something 100% yourself.
Yeah.
When you don't have all the information, yes, you need, you're not trained in this.
Yes.
And to like, when you do something wrong, and we've all seen someone that like very publicly mess up somehow.
Yes.
And instead of like sincerely apologizing, sort of continuing with their bullshit,
yeah,
and not really wanting to apologize. And people don't respect you. It's so much easier ultimately to admit when you were wrong, and people then are able to forgive you.
Yes.
It's like you're taking the hardest route possible.
Yes.
By keeping up the facade and also then making everyone hate you still.
I'm trying to think of a celebrity who recently had to apologize.
Rachel Hollis. Is the one I was thinking of.
Oh, what did she apologize about?
There were several things.
That's right. I remember now.
But she did a TikTok where she reduced the woman who helps her maintain her house calling her the lady who cleans my toilets.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is,
and yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
And then she apologized and said that she said, I don't want to be relatable. What makes you think I want to be relatable? And then she listed people like Harriet Tubman,
Oprah,
who were also unrelatable. Yeah.
And it's like, okay, rich white lady.
Okay, Rachel.
Stop putting yourself in the theoretical pants or bus seat or whatever. Totally not the right response.
No.
But when someone, whether it's a celebrity or somebody in your personal life or even somebody at work, somebody in power who is like, I thought one way, I'm actually really wrong, mm-hmm, and I'm here to learn just like everyone is here to learn. Mm-hmm. It makes that person so much more relatable, more approachable, and more human.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why, I mean, like, I know this is a very serious topic, but like getting back to the farm decor. Like,
Kathleen,
I know.
You are so brave.
I'm so brave to admit, because I was at this convention this weekend for DIYers, and most of the people there were farm decor people.
You must have been in hell.
They were lovely people.
They were, huh?
And it really made me see the person behind the decor. And just because I don't agree with the style, mm-hmm, I don't have to publicly, vehemently hate their style. Yeah. I understand the benefits.
What are the benefits of farmhouse decor?
It's cozy.
It sure is.
It can be really delightful when it's minimalist.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, let's not get into the maximalist farm decor. That's garbage.
Okay. But that seems like, again, like you're walking down that primrose path of being real hateful towards decor.
I mean, aesthetically, it can be pleasing at times.
Of course it can. It's beautiful.
When before I thought it could be pleasing at no times.
Right. And like if you have a barn door on wheels, it can open and close so easily.
Okay. All right. I'll give you that.
Thank you.
It's, yeah, the hinges on that are easier on the sheetrock joints or the door frame than a regular door hinge, I guess. But anyway, uncovering your mistakes allows you to grow and helps you gain the respect of people in your life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Even the ones who make farmhouse decor.
I mean, but the barn doors, I don't know.
They're gorgeous. You're hateful. You have heard us talk about Rothy's shoes before.
Yes.
And if you have been like, I know, they say they're great, I'll get around to buying a pair at some point, this is the moment where we say to you, stop listening. I mean, keep listening,
yeah,
but stop saying you're going to do it. Go get yourself a pair of Rothy's already. They have a million different styles, colors,
yes,
shapes, patterns, and these are going to be your new perfect obsession. You have a show you love binging, you have a song you love listening to, you need your shoe that you become obsessed with.
I was recently in an elevator and there was a flight attendant in the hotel in the elevator with me.
Ooh.
And I look down at her feet and I start to smile because you know what she's wearing, Bethany?
Rothy's.
She is wearing Rothy's, the classic one that I always see women all over New York City wearing, the black pointed toe flat.
Yep, classic.
Oh, and then I looked up at the flight attendant with a twinkle in my eye and I said, I like your Rothy's. And she's like, I know, right? They're the most comfortable shoe ever.
They truly are. And it's perfect for travel because you can wash them. They are machine washable because they're made out of recycled plastic water bottles. But if you're not traveling, if you're just running errands in your hometown, or if you're chasing after children, or if you're planning a heist, Rothy's are the shoes to wear because they're comfortable, they're packable.
Yes.
And also, they don't make a lot of noise when you walk. So you can sneak through Washington, D.C. when you need to steal the Declaration of Independence. No one's gonna hear you.
And if you have someone who likes masculine styles,
yeah,
they make shoes for men too, and they're really cool. I know Dennis has a pair.
He sure does, and I have a pair too. I have the loafer in the color mocha, which is like a grayish color.
Oh, and the one that I'm wearing all the time now is the Mary Jane.
Yes.
I have them in bright red.
So cute.
They are everything to me because red is a neutral.
And Rothy's best sellers are the point and the flat. People Magazine named The Point the best flat for their first ever style awards in 2021.
Oh.
And they go with everything. So step up your shoes and accessories this summer. Can you hear me getting passionate? It's because I love you and I want you to try something new.
Yes.
Get ready to be asked, are those Rothy's?
That's what
by
I say
a
to
chick on the elevator.
Yeah, that's what I say to everybody. or rather I say, I am the same pair.
Yep.
Or I love your Rothy's.
Don't be afraid of me. I'm just enthusiastic.
Plus, get $20 off of your first purchase at Rothy's.com/taste.
That's Rothy's.com/taste to finally get yourself a pair of Rothy's.
So in the entire time that I've known you, Bethany.
Yeah.
You have never lived with anyone else, not a partner,
no.
Not a roommate.
No.
Nothing.
No.
And so now you're like a week and a half in.
Yeah.
Of living with Dennis.
Yeah.
How is it?
It is delightful.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that.
It's so funny. Yeah, thank you. Me too. It's so interesting because I have lived with people before. When I was in college, I had roommates.
Yeah.
I lived with one other partner mm-hmm. early on in my life, but I don't speak to any of my old roommates because I'm not a good person to live with.
Oh, me too. I'm
really,
I'm not a good person to live with.
No, you like your things, you like them where they are, and you don't want anyone to touch them.
Well, no, not that, but I'm just messy.
Yeah. Okay.
I play the radio very loud.
Yeah.
And I like things the way I like them.
Yeah. I need so much alone time that just living with another person just was never really an option. But
yeah,
anyone who knows me knows like why this all happened and it was the right thing to do. And it's great. It's allowed me to see a side of Dennis that is not stressed.
Yeah.
That enjoys quiet.
Yes.
And we have so much time to ourselves because the house is a house and not an apartment.
Yeah.
That when we see each other, it is a delight.
Yeah.
It's nice to have a person around. I'm still not used to asking for help.
Mm-hmm.
Like yesterday I was trying to put a carpet on a floor, a rug on a floor after all of the furniture was already set.
Oh, Bethany, I have made that mistake so many times.
What are you gonna do?
I know.
And so Dennis comes into the room and I'm like leaning a chair into my own body so I can like hoist it up and like kick the carpet under it.
Yeah.
And Dennis said, do you need help? And I was like, nope. Because I just am so used to not asking for it and not having it. And it's fun. It's nice. It's good. We are both very curmudgeonly in what we like and where we like things and how we like things done.
Mm-hmm.
And we're learning how to balance out who does what. And
yeah,
it's nice too because Dennis always frankly, was a slob whenever he was at my apartment. He called it his flop house. He would leave food out. He would leave dishes out. He would leave floss out. He would just leave everything crap everywhere. I was always kind of like following him and picking stuff up.
Yeah.
And I was nervous that moving in together, it would just become that I just follow him and pick stuff up.
Yeah.
But this is different. He's very clean. I try to be as clean as possible. I think I'm fairly clean. It feels like we're playing house.
Yeah. You today are glowing.
Ugh.
All of the stresses of living expenses where you guys were living apart.
We were paying.
Yeah.
Almost $6,000 between the two of us in rent every month.
And gentle listeners, like, Dennis had a better deal than Bethany.
Yeah.
And so between two people, like, even for New York City, that's on, like, sort of like the medium end.
Oh, it's actually less than average now.
It's crazy.
Average rent now in Manhattan is $5,000 a month. For that to be average, it means that a shit ton of it is higher than $5,000 a month.
Oh, my God. God. So, I know financially a huge burden is lifted. And also, you just needed space.
Space, nature.
Nature.
Quiet.
Yeah.
And I needed to, I realized the reason that I couldn't live in New York anymore is because there's like this trifecta of things I can't do, which is I hate the heat.
Yeah.
And walking, I get overheated immediately.
Yep.
But I also get really car sick if I'm not driving. And I needed to save money.
Yep.
So to get anywhere, I couldn't get a cab or an Uber or Lyft because I would get car sick. Also, it was too expensive. So I had to walk everywhere, which made me hot and made me miserable.
And the subway is also hot and miserable.
Hot and miserable. So I just was needing to get out. And now that I can drive places in my Subaru, whose name is Bubbles.
Oh, Bethany, you got the lesbian car.
I have my two sisters and I all drive Subarus. Yeah. We are all driving lesbian cars.
My mom has a lesbian car too.
It is great. Did we talk about on the podcast why Subarus are lesbian cars?
No, we didn't. We haven't.
It's just a whole marketing thing. They realized that this was an untapped market and they were like, oh yeah, well, we love people who are outdoorsy.
when my mom bought her lesbian Subaru last year, she came home with the sport edition.
Hell yeah.
So it's got a bright orange stripe,
like, sassy
around the wheels and on the bottom of the car.
Amazing.
It's so funny.
Amazing. But
if I have to buy another car,
Subaru,
it's gonna be a Subaru.
I am not going to go send you to my guy because he's a mess.
Yeah.
But like, Subarus are great cars. Yeah. Bubbles is amazing. Every time I come outside, I say, hey, Bubbles.
Yep.
And I imagine she says, hey, back.
Especially you, like, seeing Dennis not stressed for the first time. That really hits a note with me because when Neil and I were trying to buy an apartment, he was at a job that was just killing him.
Yeah.
Like, I swear sometimes I would go into his office and he would be foaming at the mouth.
Oh.
He was just so stressed out of his mind. And when he quit that job late last year and took a couple of months off, and now he's got a job that works so much better for him.
Yeah.
It is like he is a new person.
Ugh.
Like, we were very close to not being together. We had to move, but he stayed at that job because, I don't know, they were going public and he was going to get a big payout. Yeah. And it was the only way that we were ever going to make down payment cashing out his shares of the company. And just seeing a partner after they've been in a bad place for a long time.
Yeah.
And Neil has seen that in me at times. It gives you a new lease on your relationship. If you must feel like you're newly dating.
It's so, it's crazy. And he said that I haven't been taking naps every day like I used to.
Yep.
And he's like, I haven't seen you nap. And I said, it's because I'm not depressed.
Yes.
And having
a frog pond.
We have a goddamn frog pond.
That is a treasure and a gem.
When we were moving, we were driving this 26-foot U-Haul through the streets of Manhattan.
Woo!
Which is why I still can't feel my arms because I was gripping that thing so tightly.
Oh, God.
But we were just screaming down the highway. We were like yelling at people on the streets. They couldn't hear us. We were just like, we have a frog pond!
We have a frog pond.
What are you doing?
Hey, Bethany.
Get out of the city!
I was watching your Instagram stories, or maybe it was Dennis's Instagram stories, when you were driving that U-Haul.
Oh, my God.
And you told Dennis in the story that you thought the worst day of your life was the day your parents told you they were getting divorced. But you had decided that the worst day of your life was the day you had to drive a 26-foot U-Haul through the streets of Manhattan.
That was the second worst day of my entire life. I think this sort of echoes back from what I said in segment one, where it's just like, sometimes you have to just do the thing that feels too scary, but like, you have to do it.
Yep.
Because on the other side, it's not going to kill you.
Yeah.
Very few things will actually kill you.
I have a segue for that.
What's that?
Do you know what I learned this week?
What'd you learn this week?
I learned that you should not mix bleach and dish soap.
Will it kill you?
Bethany, so, okay, here's the thing. A lot of, especially in industrial kitchens,
yeah,
they use like different types of soap to wash their dishes,
okay,
than we do at home because, you know, strangers are eating on these plates.
Yeah, lots of different STDs, yeah, and STIs in everyone's yeah, mouths.
On their forks and in their,
everywhere.
On their tongues and whatever. And so a lot of, some types of soap, not Dawn and not Tide, because okay, this applies to laundry detergent as well, they have ammonia in them.
Okay.
And you can not mix bleach and ammonia because it creates a toxic gas.
Oh no.
And I was reading about this story where a dish guy at a restaurant accidentally mixed the two and he died because he inhaled this all these noxious fumes. And so, gentle listeners, I beg you, especially if maybe you're buying your soap from the dollar store or
yeah,
something,
yeah, yeah,
just make sure that there's no ammonia in it. So if for whatever reason you accidentally mix bleach and some sort of soap, you won't die.
Because I mix, sometimes like if I'm cleaning my shower.
Yes.
Put a little dish soap for the foam in action, put a little yep, bleach for the whitening action, and all of a sudden you're dead in the shower.
Bethany, yes, and I clean the shower naked with the water running.
Of course, got to.
I clean my body and the shower
yeah,
at the same
up
time.
Surprise.
Yes, so yes, everybody, just make sure you check ahead of time.
Wow, that's crazy.
Crazy, right?
The fact that a bunch of us haven't just randomly dropped dead is like truly, and I know I just said it's really hard to like actually die, but like it's
yeah,
not always.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
So you fuck up.
So what did you learn this week?
I'm looking it up because I wrote it down and immediately forgot. Oh my God. What I learned is that the little habits that you do every single day
yeah,
are more of who you are than the things that you show to the huge world.
Of course.
These little habits build who you're going to be tomorrow. And yeah, you know, like I've said before on the podcast, I'm a big fan of like looking out for future you. So mm-hmm, sometimes if I don't want to do something, but I know future Bethany is going to be relieved I did it,
yeah,
I'll be like, okay, I'll do that thing for future Bethany.
Yeah.
The little habits you do every single day, whether it's like brushing your teeth really, really well
mm-hmm,
so that future you doesn't get gingivitis or, you know, doing the one little thing every day for the career you want to have or whatever yeah, it is, those little habits speak more about who you are and what you're going to be than, you know, the big goals you have.
Of course.
And I think that, you know, having the time and the space to take off and kind of look at what life is and mm-hmm, what life should be, that lesson really came through to me. And so,
love that.
I know, I feel like I'm sort of rambly this
episode, you're
but
not,
like that's where
my nutritionist says that all the time.
Really?
What will future Kathleen say to you today?
Yes. Hopefully she'll say it in song. I don't know.
Bethany, where can people follow you on social media?
You can follow me on Instagram, Ms. Bethany Watson, and on Twitter, Radio Bethany. What about you, Kathleen?
At Kathleen loves color on everything.
Yay! And it's just O-R, not O-U-R,
yeah,
right? Because you're not in Europe.
I'm not British.
Yeah.
It's C-O-L-O-R.
Okay.
Okay.
You can also follow our show on social media, on Twitter at Acquired Podcast.
On Facebook, Acquired Taste Podcast.
Instagram, Acquired Taste Podcast.
We have a phone number
yes,
where we play your voicemails. That's 917-994-0353.
Shoot us an email. Let us know what you're thinking. Hello at Acquired Taste Podcast.
We also have a snail mail address, and that's an Acquired Taste Podcast, P.O. Box 1717, Hoboken, New Jersey, 07030.
Yes. And another thing that I just thought of that we have
yes
is Patreon,
yes,
which have. I remember yeah, we said earlier
we do. And Dennis and Bethany have a Twitch stream.
Yes.
Where can people find you on Twitch?
You can go to twitch.tv/Dennis Callow, C-A-H-L-O. We stream live every Thursday.
Yeah.
We are back this week, 5 p.m Eastern Standard Time. It's called Two Idiots Play. We are not great at video games. He's better than I am, but we have fun. We every 6:30 we do 6:30. Bring your bubble wrap. You'll understand what it's about.
Oh.
And speaking of, Dennis edits this podcast. You can follow him on social media at Dennis C-A-H-L-O.
Okay. I think we both need this more than ever.
Holy Lord. This is your weekly reminder to take a deep breath.
And taste buds, here's what you had to say this week.
Hi, Bethany and Kathleen. This is Laura, long-time listener. I will forever refer to myself as the girl that had a mental emotional breakdown when Bethany didn't like Movie About Time. I've been catching up on the pod. I was several weeks behind. And what I learned this week is that I am in a parasocial relationship with both you, Kathleen, and Bethany. And that's all I have to say about that. Hope you guys have a great week. Love you. Bye.
Hi, ladies. Hi, Dennis. My name is Lauren. I just wanted to call this morning because I cannot shake this dream that I had last night. I had a male manager hit on me at work in this dream and told Bethany about it, and she promptly let me borrow Dennis for an after-work event to help put my boss in his place. So I just want to thank you guys. It was a lot of fun, and it was hilarious. I think maybe I've been binging a little too much on your podcast lately, but thank you, Dennis, for being America's boyfriend, and thank you, Bethany, for letting me borrow him.
Hey, it's Tate with Nina. I'm just catching up on the podcast, listening to the Revenge Bedtime. Given I don't like the name Revenge Bedtime because I don't like thinking that I'm doing something bad to myself, but I feel beyond steam, and I kind of want to share this episode with everybody so they can understand what I've been doing my entire life, just trying to catch up with myself. I've gotten to the point where I told my boyfriend to go to bed early and go read his book just so I could be myself and get to bed at an earlier time. But people will hear this episode because you guys explained it better than I could have ever. But thanks so much.
Hello, ladies. Case Bud Mabel from Seattle. I don't remember if Bethany was the one talking about fairies recently. I must have heard something about fairies and how they're, some are good, some are evil. But that being said, I was going to have sleep paralysis last night, and it was definitely going to be a fairy as my sleep paralysis demon. But in my head, I started replaying what Bethany was saying about, like, just start wiggling one part of your body. And I just remember, like, half asleep, half awake, yelling, like, leave me alone. And I started moving, like, both of my hands. And next thing you know, I, like, just fall asleep, and the sleep paralysis demon just steps on my face and walks away. So it works. Literally consciously move one part of your body, and you won't be terrified for the rest of the night.
Hey, ladies. It's Taste Bud Liana. I'm catching up on the pod and listening to the debate team episode, and I would like to share my favorite debate story. So I have my master's in social work, and part of the curriculum was taking a policy class, and in that policy class, we did debate. We had to do two debates each over the semester. One, she wanted us to pick a cause that we really felt strongly about and agree with it, and then she wanted to have us, with the second debate, pick a cause that we feel really strongly about and take the opposing side. My opposing argument that I had to take, that I felt passionately about, was gay marriage. And if you don't know, I am a gay woman married to another gay woman. That's how that works. And I had to get up in front of my class and talk about how gay people should be married and shouldn't adopt children. And you should know that when I do something like this, especially in the world of academia, I commit. And I commit hard. So to offset all of the bigotry and nonsense coming out of my mouth, I ended up wearing, like, my Love is Love shirt with my denim jacket with my pride pins, and, like, oh, man, it was brutal. Ayesha was very impressed. Also gay, by the way. I didn't believe a single thing I said, and I made sure to use my incognito browser, because imagine if I ran for office. Oh, God, they'd have a lot on me. Okay, anyway, guys, I love you, and love is love, and gay people are people, and you guys are great. All right, bye.